Hey. It's Foss FM with Brian Romero guest hosting while Foss is away on his honeymoon. Guns, gators, what else? Barbecue. I'm here with Thomas today from the arts department.
What's up, everybody?
We're here to talk about some illustration and design again because the people asked for it.
Woo!
All right, Thomas, where do you think I should start? What do you want to know? Like, if you were, what do you want to know? From the outside perspective.
How did it all start, you know?
How did it all start?
In
the beginning, the earth cooled, and then came the dinosaurs. All right, I'll just start with, like...
The hand-drawn stuff.
The hand-drawn stuff? All right, we'll start with, like,
the basic
process
yeah.
of what we go through at work, which is, you know, to create skateboard graphics. I still do a lot of stuff by hand, drawing with brushes and pens, and like dip pens that you dip into actual ink and put on Bristol board. But what really starts is each season we come up with concepts. We got to have a theme because cool drawings aren't, you know, really good enough on their own. You got to have an idea, especially in a series where everything's supposed to fit together. You have, you know, a bunch of guys on the team. You have to find something that can relate to all of them in some way. So it usually starts there. It's brainstorming. Sometimes I come up with ideas. Sometimes it's, you know, sales guy like Steve came up with the wrestling series idea, which is out now and is, you know, being really well received. You know, a lot of times it comes from Jim and Eric may suggest something. So it could come from a lot of different places, and my inspiration is kind of whatever I see or what I've been into in the past, and I try to mine those things that I think are cool that other people might appreciate. So that's the starting point.
Sounds good.
After that, it's like, what happens? We do sketches, and I drop a bunch of stuff on really kind of just 8.5 by 11 paper. And I print out these little templates that are skateboard shaped.
A million sketches.
Yeah, I do a lot of sketches. Usually for the initial stuff, just to get Jim and Eric into the idea, there are not that many. It's like just a couple tries. Sometimes just the first one's enough to give them an impression of what I'm trying to do. And then I'll scan that in. I'll color that on in Photoshop really quick and show it to those guys. And if they're into it, then I start working on, you know, compositions for everybody. Sometimes I just pitch them like a couple, you know, couple graphics to sell in the series. Sometimes I'll sketch out the whole thing really rough first. And if it's something where I feel like color is going to have play a major importance, I'll do some really rough colors in Photoshop. Once that's done and those guys are into it, then becomes this weird process where like it could take me a little bit of time or it could take me a really long time to kind of come up with the final drawings before I ink them. And I'm switching styles a lot at Death Wish, not only to entertain myself, but to try and make it look different every season so it doesn't feel like it's the same dude just pumping out artwork all the time. I want to like challenge myself and like, you know, keep it interesting for everybody else who cares about this stuff. And, you know, so that process could take a while. I may could take a couple weeks. It could take like a month and a half to get to the final drawings before I get to the inking stage. And a lot of times I have to rework things where it's like there's a character and I need to get the pose just right to sell the idea that I'm trying to communicate. And a lot of times, you know, my first stuff tends to be kind of more bland and I have to kind of look at it and be like, all right, how can I make this more exciting? What could be better about it? And then I'll just, you know, redraw, I'll trace over old drawings if it's good. Sometimes if I'm in a place where it's like almost there and I could kind of chop together a few different sketches, I'll do that. I'll scan them in, put them in Photoshop and make a really loose composition, print that out, put it in the light box and trace it to a final piece of art that looks halfway decent. And at that point,
you can tell him about that. You can tell about that. The Kiss series you made.
We'll talk about that. Remind me again after the first song. We'll talk about the Lost series. So it's like after the pencils are done, gets to the inks, and that's where I just use a Winsor & Newton Series 7 Sable Hair brush, usually a size 2, maybe a size 4, and it takes a lot of practice to get good at using these brushes. But I've been doing it since high school, and I kind of took a break doing that when I was doing web design right after art school, but it didn't take me long to kind of pick it back up again. And you know, it's like anything else. If you've done it a million times for a bunch of years in a row and you try it again, you can remember how to do it pretty quickly. And from there, it gets scanned in, the final artwork gets scanned in. And either if it's gonna be spot color, which is where you get those really solid poppy colors where there's no halftone dots like you see in a magazine, then it goes into Illustrator. And we'll import the line work as a bitmap. And then on a separate layer, I'll color it, usually underneath. And I'll trace out all the shapes. And I use a Wacom tablet to do all that stuff because I don't like drawing with a mouse, which I've told Andy is like drawing with a bar of soap. It sucks. So it's a little hard to use the Wacom tablet at first, but it's worth the effort to learn how to use it, because in the long run, it'll save you just hours worth of time. And if it's going to be colored, if it's going to be a CMYK board where it looks more photographic, or I want a more painterly kind of effect, then I'll do that in Photoshop. And occasionally, I will actually do straight up paintings, like that crazy consumer series, which was like the Wacky Packs. Those were gouache paintings on illustration board. So they're done in a really traditional way. And that new board, that locked up board, or that creature busting out of prison, that one's an acrylic painting. And it's kind of small. It's only like maybe 17 inches tall and like, I don't know, 4 or 5 inches wide. It's pretty small painting. Just scan that in really high res and drop it into Illustrator in our templates we have, send them off to be manufactured. And then we go through a process of sampling. I know this is really exciting, but we get stuff back and sometimes it's perfect. Usually it's not. And we have to, you know, point out all the problems, send an email back, and, you know, hopefully it gets fixed. Sometimes
things... I fuck up.
Or the manufacturer, you know, screws it up and you know, like the TNC series, I was bummed because that fluorescent, like highlighter yellow, they screwed up and put a normal yellow on the very first run of those boards. And I was really pissed, but we burned through them and reordered them and got them the correct colors, and everyone was happy.
Make sure to expand all your artwork.
Oh, yeah. Expand your artwork. If you don't know what that means, I'm not going to explain it on the radio.
You shouldn't be a designer.
All right. I think I'm going to do a song, and then we'll talk about that Kiss series, which never came out. But you can see it if you got the box, the kind of the deluxe edition of the Death Wish video, the last one that came out.
It's amazing.
All right. I'm going to play, The Strokes, New York City Cops.
Yep.
No.
All right, we're back. Talk about the Kiss series. A couple years ago, Jim had a great idea about doing a Kiss series, you know, based on like the Destroyer album cover. Something really 70s, back when Kiss had the makeup and the leather and the studs and all that stuff. And I thought it was cool. That'd be really funny. And, you know, everyone seemed to be into it. And I started, you know, drawing these out. And, you know, it took, you know, a couple weeks to get some really tight drawings. It looked like, you know, the team at the time was like Lizard as Gene Simmons and I'm trying to forget who everyone was. Like, oh man, I'd have to see it to remember exactly who was who. But, and then I started doing painting, like as acrylic paintings, and I spent a lot of time in this. And the whole time I didn't know, like, Eric wasn't totally into it. And eventually it just got canned because he just wasn't feeling it in the end. And, you know, being a professional, you have to be able to come to terms with not all your work's going to get out there. And sometimes you'll do pieces and they'll get killed and, you know, they never see the light of day. In this case, it's in that deluxe edition. You can see them in there if you want to peep them out. But yeah, you have to be prepared sometimes. I did a whole snowboard for Burton too that got killed, and it was a cool piece, and in the end they didn't want to run it. I still got paid for it, which is cool. But, you know, you can't get too emotional about work you do for clients. Like, you have to be into it and excited about it, but you can't take it personally when people want changes, you know, client doesn't like something. You have to think about why that might be and what you can do to make it better. And sometimes it takes selling it. You have to really believe in what you're doing and know what you're doing. And Thomas reminded me over the break to talk about, like, all the research I do when I do any of these pieces. And I spent a lot of time, you know, on Google Images, reading up on whatever
the history.
With the history of whatever the topic might be. I'll spend time learning about it so that not just so I could pick up the artistic style, but understand what it is. Because then if you're doing a parody, too, you can better make fun of it. You can dig deeper and find elements that maybe no one else has used with that idea, and you can make it new. Or just do something that is more appealing to people that are into that. So sometimes, yeah, I'll read books, read websites, tons of Google Images. I buy tons of comic books, hardcover art books. I'll watch whole movies and find scenes and be like, oh, I really like what's going on in the background there. I like that background, or I like the lighting on this character. Like, I'll get really obsessive about it to find the right thing that'll help me make what I think the best image is.
He downloaded like 3 WrestleMania movies just to get some inspiration.
Yeah, I actually went on YouTube and watched a lot of those old wrestling matches too, just to see, like, try to remember all the different moves they used to use and the different characters, because, you know, we're inspired by old school wrestling, you know, from the 80s and a little bit into like the early 90s. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, it wasn't just the way I remembered it. I had to go back and kind of re-experience that and also find out, like, I loved watching wrestling when I was a kid. And, you know, I used to, you know, do horrible wrestling moves to my brother off the couch and, like, elbow in the face and get yelled at by my mom for hurting him. And I just need to, like, reconnect with it, find out what I liked about it. And kind of get back in that place of being a kid again. And I try to do that with all this stuff, because I'm not making skateboards for guys in their late 30s. I'm making skateboards for kids and teenagers and like young adults. And I just tap into what about that, like that age, what I was into, what kind of things, not necessarily the exact, you know, movie or something like that. It's more about a state of mind when you're that age, like what kind of things excited you and turned you on, and especially visually, what did you see as a kid that you're like, whoa, that's really sick, I have to buy this board. Because I remember a lot of the old boards I had, all the graphics, and, you know, I was never really good at skateboarding, so I focused more on that. I wasn't thinking about like shapes for tricks or anything. I was just like, what is the raddest graphic I can find when I have the money to buy a new deck? And, you know, there's like one store in town that was called Beyond the Beach in Madison, Connecticut. And it's like, you know, pretty much restricted to what they had. And, you know, it's, I was really influenced by the Jim Phillips Santa Cruz stuff I talked about last time, and the VCJ Paul Peralta graphics, as well as like Lucero's like Schmidt Sticks graphics and all those guys, like all that stuff from that mid to late 80s. That was really my peak era of interest in skateboarding. And then as I got older, there's just other stuff came along. You know, I started playing guitar, focusing on that. And even though I'd still skate with my friends, I wasn't like trying to get good anymore. It's just something fun to do with my friends. And by the time I moved to New York, you know, I was skating in Union Square, and I bailed, my board shot out, you know, onto Broadway, and some city bus ran it over and broke it in half. And I figured, well, I probably shouldn't be doing this in New York anymore. Not good enough to take it. New York City's really kind of a harsh skateboard environment. You have to be pretty good to get around and like take advantage of what's there, because it's not all nicely paved, or like there's not a lot of like super ideal spots like Southern California. There's tons of great places and there's parks. New York is much more just raw, and you have to find your own spot. Let's do another song and we'll come back and talk about some more artwork. I'm gonna do, let's see, Dead Weather, Cut Like a Buffalo.
Yeah.
back, and I'm going to talk about new project that I just finished, which is for Ant Hill Films. The Trek bike team went to New Zealand, and they filmed some really, really amazing stuff while they're down there. It's a really great movie. It's called Not Bad, and they hit me up to do the poster. And initially, you know, they had a bunch of possible ideas, and I did a bunch of sketches. And it was one of those things where it took a little while to find what was going to be the right image that was going to sell, be the face of this project. And we settled on, since it was in New Zealand, there's a lot of sheep there, and there's even sheep footage in the movie where they're riding down the side of a hill, and there's sheep all around them. They're doing tricks. It's crazy. And you know, we decided to go with that kind of not bad expression on a sheep, which we thought was just ridiculous and funny, and just kind of fit the weird vibe they're going for. And not weird, but just something, I don't know, a little different. And worked really hard doing this stuff, you know, in my free time. Spent a lot of late nights working on this. And that's another thing, too, is like, if you want to get into this and you need to pay your bills, like, you're going to have to keep your day job and you're going to have to work at night. And I'm already doing what I love to do, but still cool projects come my way and I don't want to not do them. So what do? I work 8 hours a day. I come home, I eat dinner with my wife, and then I sit back down and start drawing stuff again and work as long as it takes to get these done. And the poster came out really cool. And after that was over, I was like, man, that was rough. Like, you know, there's a lot of hours getting this poster right. And then they hit me up with, all right, we only have a couple weeks, but we really want to use your artwork for an animated intro to the movie. Like, it's going to kick off the film. It's going to be your artwork. We have a really great animator who's going to do all the After Effects stuff and take all the pieces that you do and move them around and color them and make it, you know, come to life. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to do this, because I know I used to do some work in After Effects back in my web design and interactive days, so I know how much work that is. But I knew it could be done. I just knew I'm going to have to spend a lot of extra time doing this. And I finally said yes, because I haven't had a piece like that in forever, and I thought it's gonna turn out good, and it's gonna be in the front of this really great movie, so I have to do it. And you know, the intro is, I don't know, probably not even 30 seconds, and it's like to an MIA song, and it looks really cool. It has a kind of hand done with paper textures and cutouts, and it's just a really funny scene that comes in from outer space and zooms all the way into the earth, and all this crazy stuff happens, and it goes right into the team. It zooms all the way into New Zealand. It cuts to the team getting out of the plane at the airport where we zoom into. So it was a lot of work, a lot of hours, a lot of no time for anything but, you know, eating, sleeping, and working. But you have to put in that kind of work if you're really serious about doing this as a career. And also, when the good projects come, they're not always at convenient times. You have to be willing to sacrifice other parts of your life or immediate happiness for coming out with a really great piece. Or sometimes it's just you need the money. Like, you got to pay bills, and you're going to have to take this piece whether you really want to do it or not. But you still have to do a great job, because whatever piece you do, you're only as good as the last piece you did. So make it good, because people are going to remember that last thing. And if it sucked, they're going to be like, yeah, that dude's lost it, or he didn't give a shit, or, you know, he just half-assed it or phoned it in. You don't want to be that guy. You want to do your best work every time. And even if you have a short deadline, maybe you just simplify what you're doing so it still comes out good, but maybe it's less detailed, or you find a solution that isn't, you know, as complicated. Sometimes you have to think your way through it, because any piece of design or illustration is a problem-solving process. You have to figure out what you're trying to communicate to your audience and the best way to do that, whether it's with, you know, artwork, photographs, pen and ink, whatever, or, you know, graphic design, typography. You have to know what are the elements that are going to work to make it as strong as possible. So the key thing is using your brain first before you use any of your drawing or design skills, you know, the visual part of it. What is the concept? How can I communicate it best to people? And that's where it's got to kick off. You know, you can add tons of details to a project that's not going to make it necessarily good. You know, you can come up with something, maybe it's funny, but is it communicating the idea that you're trying to get across? So think about that. And do another song, and we'll come back and talk more about, you know, breaking into this industry and, you know, how hard you got to work some more, because people need to know that it's not easy. And I'll talk about how I went from working as web design and, you know, small boutique places to huge ad agencies, and then transitioned into doing illustration. And that process was long and took a lot of hard work. So let's do, speaking of art, let's do Modern Art by The Black Lips.
Keyhole at the Dolly, seeing the unknown. Well, I'm madder than a molly.
Black Lips, Modern Art. It's funny because they use that song in a Converse commercial, and the song's about doing drugs and going to art museums. So I don't know who decided to do that, but good on them. All right, so we're going to talk about how I got into doing this stuff in the first place, like the longer version, which is like I've always wanted to do cartoons and illustrations, and like I was drawing ever since I can remember, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do until high school. I thought it was comic books, and I love comic books. I still do. Just went to Comic-Con, and you know, I got into that thanks to my friend Steve Little, who's, you know, saw me drawing all these funny animal kind of things, like, you know, like bunny rabbits with machine guns shooting each other. And he's like, oh, that's pretty cool. But, you know, have you seen this? And then he, you know, takes out, like, Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns and, you know, Dave Gibbons and Alan Moore's Watchmen, and totally, you know, altered my trajectory from there. I started getting interested in the, you know, darker, more serious comic books. And, you know, I still love superhero stuff, and I've kind of reverted it back into enjoying some more lighthearted stuff, like the old Jack Kirby comics and like the Fantastic Four and, you know, things like that. But, you know, I started going into comics that were painted, and that took me into illustration. I was like, oh, I you know, reading interviews with these guys, and they're like, oh, I'm influenced by Egon Schiele and Gustav Klimt and illustrators like Bob Peek, and then that got me into studying illustration and fine artists and exploring that realm. And I think that's important for everyone, whether you go to art school or not, you should study art history. You don't have to like go through from like beginning to end. Start somewhere that interests you and read about those artists, read interviews, listen to interviews, watch documentaries, and find out what interested them. And then you go, you keep digging and spreading out from there. Who were the guys they hung out with in their time? And it's important to have a deep knowledge of that stuff, because you don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. There's a lot of cool techniques and ideas that have come before you. Someone's already figured them out and done them great. So you should be able to pick up from there and continue. Don't try and do things in a vacuum. It's better to know more about art than less. And, you know, I love skateboard art. I love like rock posters, but you don't necessarily need to look at all that other stuff to get good at it. Find things outside of that so you can bring something fresh to what's going on in skateboarding right now. Because if everyone just did the same stuff over and over again, it'd be really, really boring. It's best to, you know, live life, experience life, study art, like get ideas by going out there too. You don't want to just totally be an introvert and sit in your room and do nothing. A lot of times you get turned on to new stuff by meeting new people. You know, they'll turn you on to music, they'll turn you on to art and movies, whatever it is. It's good to get out there and experience things, but don't be afraid to study art history on your own. You don't need to take a class. You know, you can pick it up anywhere. Get a general art history book and then see the different kind of movements throughout the world and start digging into the ones you think look cool. And try different styles. Experiment with different techniques. Don't be afraid to fail either, because I've done way more bad drawings than I've done good drawings. And you have to get as many of those out as possible. And don't be afraid to throw away artwork too. Like if you're starting a piece and you're get in halfway, but you think it sucks, don't try and save it. You can't. Just throw it away and start over. Sometimes it's much more liberating to do that than try and finagle some piece, especially if you like try scanning it in and try fixing it in Photoshop. Forget it. Most of the time it's just going to be a disaster. Just start over. You'll be happier in the end. Let's do another song and then we'll talk about basically where I started and how I got to skateboarding, the extended version. All right, we're going to do, let's do the Yeah, Black Tongue.
Have a pack, sooner with this, or you're gonna break.
We're back. All right, continuing the story. I was in high school, comic books, and I decided to go to School of Visual Arts in New York City, which I've talked about that part of it, where I went for illustration and blew off most of my academic classes so I could take more art classes. Taking, you know, digital video, photography. I spent a lot of time in the dark room, and you know, illustration, and I got into design too because I didn't want these graphic designer guys putting typography all over my illustrations that I spent so much time making. And I was working at this place called United Digital Artists as a teacher assistant after I learned like Photoshop and Illustrator and Premiere and After Effects, and they taught classes there for professionals. And it was a cool part-time job to have, you know, in school, because it just reinforced all this computer stuff I just learned. And all the teachers there were, you know, high-end professionals, people who wrote books on After Effects and Illustrator and Photoshop, like really, you know, hardcore nerds. And they're all really cool people and super talented. And I learned a lot just from being in those classes. And then I, you know, TA'd for one class where this dude, I'm like, this guy seems really young. And it turns out he's still in school, and he was at Cooper Union, and he was about to graduate. His name is Mike Essel, and he's a really talented graphic designer. And I TA'd for a couple of his classes, and at the end of one of them, he's like, hey, you know, what are you doing next year? Because he had seen my work. We'd started talking, and I showed him my portfolio, and he's like, oh, you can do some pretty cool stuff. You know, because I'm going to start a design firm with my friends from Cooper Union, and, you know, would you like to come on board and help us? And I was like, yeah, that'd be amazing. And he's like, well, don't you have another year of school to finish? I was like, I don't give a shit. I got into this to get out there and do real work, not sit in a classroom all day. So much to the chagrin of my parents, I dropped out and started working with those guys at their new firm, The Chopping Block, where I learned a lot about graphic design from those guys. They're all of them, Mike, Matt, and Rob, and Tom, all those dudes, really talented guys. Learned a lot about programming too. That's when I started getting to web design. You know, that's was the birth of it. It's really new, and HTML was still really simple, but not that many people really did it. So if you're someone who could design and make a nice looking website that was functional, like, you're, you know, pretty hot commodity for a moment until everyone learned HTML. But for a while it was a pretty cool thing to do. And it's really exciting because I could see the potential of the internet, even though my mom had no idea what I was doing. My dad had no idea. They didn't know what the internet was. They'd never, you know, been online. They'd never used a web browser. And I'm trying to explain to them, like, yeah, I'm making this stuff that's on the computer and you can read and buy stuff. And they just didn't really get it till a few years later. But from The Chopping Block, I got hired to go to basically a whole line of different agencies, you know, from small ones, you know, that don't even exist anymore, like Iguana Studios, to bigger places like, which also no longer exists, Arnell Group. They had a division called Surge Interactive. I worked there. And then they got rolled up into a bigger agency called Draft Worldwide. So I started doing smaller stuff, you know, smaller clients or smaller aspects of online, you know, advertising and websites, you know, a lot of web banners. Initially it was stuff for like Disney and CD Now and all these places. And then I started doing whole sites and working on, you know, clients like Playboy, Maserati, Jose Cuervo. And then in the end is like a lot of Verizon. And that's where I started to like lose my mind, because Verizon's only got three colors you can work with and like one font family. And is really, after a while, there's only so much you can do and you start losing your mind. And, you know, I lost my appetite for working that business. I was over it. And I couldn't see a way out because I was making a lot of money at the time. When you get in that upper echelon of ad agencies, even though it's just like at that point, like a designer or senior designer or something, so I demoted myself from art director positions because I wanted to do more hands-on stuff. You know, I couldn't take it anymore. And seeing them fire people like right before Christmas because they had been there the longest, so they had a big salary and they want to cut back. And instead of firing some younger, newer dudes, they're like, oh, we'll fire the guy who's been here, the most loyal guy. We'll fire him because he's got the biggest salary. And at that point, I was like, these guys, they don't care about anybody. They don't care about their teams. And it was like, I had a whole year of, it's kind of like the movie Office Space, where I was just a total dick. Like, I did my work, but I did, everything else was super minimal. Like, I would decline meeting requests and just not go. I'd pitch my, you know, my projects first so I could leave the meeting. Like, you know, just, they'd ask me to work late on things and I'd just say no and like just, you know, walk right past them after that, not even wait around for them to try and like, you know, convince me of anything. And eventually I got laid off for my bad attitude, but it was the best thing because at that point I just hated it. I really hated my life. I'd become a miserable person because when you work in that world, it's not really 9 to 5. It's really like 10 to 7 or 8. And you know, yeah, you have money, but you're living in New York City and money doesn't go very far. And you end up spending it just to feel good about your life that you're not, you know, because you spend so much time at work. And the only thing I had to really show for it, I mean, I learned a lot of stuff about business, which is good, and how to conduct yourself as a professional and until my horrible attitude at the end. But, you know, I got 2 really nice guitars out of it that I still have and I'll never sell. So at least I got that. And again, the experience of like working at a higher level like that, like working on multi-million dollar projects and stuff. And, you know, it makes it easier to attempt other things. So you're like, oh, I've already done these big things. I can try something different that's smaller. And it was a rough transition because I really wanted to jump right away into doing illustration, but I still had to take on a lot of freelance web design projects to pay my bills. You know, it's like you can't just jump into it and hope that you're gonna make it. You have to do what you already know how to do and transition yourself into that new place. And it took, you know, ultimately a lot of years. I had some good projects, even, you know, initially, like I did this book with Mike Essel called Weirdo Deluxe, and it's about all those kind of juxtaposed pop surrealist artists. And he did a lot of the layout and design. I did a lot of custom typography and icons and illustrations for that. And it was a really cool project for Chronicle Books, which, you know, they're a pretty big name in the art book scene. And that was a really fun project. And my wife even helped me out at the time. She was just moved to New York and we weren't married yet, but, you know, it was a cool project. And there are a lot of like little things here and there that kind of built up to the point where I could do this full time. And again, also I came to a dead end in New York where I felt like, you know what, all the stuff that I'm really into is in here. You know, I love cartoon animation, I love skateboarding, I love, you know, rock and roll, and like, you know, there's some of that stuff in New York, but most of it is out here in California. And just on a lark, I just asked Leah, I'm like, just, hey, do you want to move to LA? And she's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I'm serious. And I was one of those diehard New Yorkers for like, you know, over 13 years, where I was like, I'm never going to leave this place. I love living here. It's the best. And I finally realized, you know what? It's not the best. Yeah, it's a great place, but it's not the be all end all. You know, it's another important lesson I learned, is don't get too stuck on being in one spot. And even as much as I love LA, I can't say I'm going to be here forever. I don't know what's going to happen. But it's important to be flexible and, you know, not be afraid to totally rearrange your life to go for something that, you know, to make that move to get where you want to be in your career. You have to be sort of fearless. Don't worry about missing your friends, your family. Like, yeah, that's a bummer. But, you know, we live in modern times. You can FaceTime people. You can call them on the phone. You can save up your money and go visit, or if you move to a cooler place, people will come visit you. So don't be afraid to make those moves. You have to do it for yourself, because you're going to be really pissed if you don't. You know, and it can be really scary to leave what you're comfortable with, especially in New York, which is, you know, everyone thinks it's like some, especially the people who live there, I think it's this, you know, end all be all of cities and like the best place in the world, but it's not. It's got its own pitfalls. It's got its good points, and depending on what you want to do, it may not be the place for you. But I would recommend going to art school there. I would recommend living there when you're young, for, you know, in your 20s, for, I don't know, 4 to 10 years, whatever you can tolerate, because the good thing about New York is it will make you tough, because you have to survive there. People there are, they don't take bullshit. They don't take not turning things in on time. They don't take being late. So you learn to be more responsible person. So, and that works out in your professional life, because, you know, yeah, everyone's late once in a while, but if you're constantly late and you're, and people don't like to hear excuses. They want their work. If you're, especially in California, if you're good at what you do and you're not a dick and you turn things in on time, you're going to get a lot of work. People are going to want to keep working with you. And if you're really talented on top of that, that's, you know, even better. But people need their stuff in commercial artwork. You're not just doing some paintings for yourself. These things are going to be on skateboards. They're going to be on, you know, they're going to be record covers. They're going to be, you know, posters, whatever they're going to be. They're going to be on t-shirts, but people have deadlines and you need to consider that and do to your best of your ability, turn your work in on time. And I, you know, I've been late. I'll admit it. I've fallen behind on projects and it sucks, but I do my best to turn things in on time, because it reflects poorly if you're consistently late. Don't do that if at all possible. Another thing we touched on in previous two radio shows was, you know, doing work for free when you first start doing this stuff. Try not to do anything for free. Like, I will charge my family for stuff because on principle, it's like, this is your career, right? You're taking it seriously. Well, people need to take you seriously. Just because you enjoy your job doesn't mean you don't deserve to get paid for it. You know, if other people are miserable doing their jobs, that's their problem. You love drawing, painting, designing, whatever it is, you need to get paid for it, or barter for things. If you do a shop board and they can't pay you, maybe you can get a couple $100, you know, in gear, things that you want, clothes, boards, stickers, whatever you're into, videos, and that can work for other things too. But at some point you have to be able to get paid and turn it into a full-time job, which is not easy. You know, it took me, you know, basically I'd say the better part of 5 years to transition from doing interactive work and illustration here and there to be doing mostly illustration, some design, still doing some logos. Some, you know, I still like doing custom typography where I hand draw it and clean it up in Illustrator to make it, you know, proper piece of clean vector art. But I still prefer to do mostly illustration, and I've actually cut off a lot of, you know, people I was still doing graphic design for that were friends that I enjoyed doing, they're paying me, but in the end I realized, you know what, I enjoy doing illustration the most and I have to focus on this. And so you have to learn that lesson too, like when to turn work away. And sometimes if it's not enough money and you're already too busy, do you have to learn to say no? Even if you like the project but you're already busy, don't totally ruin your life unless the money's good or the project itself is something that's really amazing that you know is gonna get you noticed. Then it's worth that trade-off. But sometimes these little here and there things, oh, can you help me do this flyer or whatever, and like, you know what, unless you have a lot of free time and or you like doing illustration design forever and never do anything else, then you can take on those little projects. But eventually they'll get to you and you have to pick and choose what you feel has value to you, not just in money, but in terms of what's a good project, what's going to be a good piece for your portfolio, and what you're going to feel good working on. And that's an important thing too, that you find projects that you're excited about, because it's much easier to finish something when you can't wait to see how it's going to turn out than whether you're like, oh, I'm just doing this so I can pay my cell phone bill. It's not going to be inspiring for a piece of artwork, at least not to me. it's better to have projects you're passionate about and try to make a living off of it. And don't be afraid to negotiate either. A lot of times it's better to ask people for more than what you want, because almost everyone expects to negotiate. And you know, it's like the same on Craigslist. If you see like a car you want for $5,000, like my 77 Firebird, and I went there and I was like, this car is not worth $5,000, and I talked the guy down to $3,000. But you know, everything's negotiable, and you have to think about that, and also think about your client too. Is this a small business, an individual, or is this like a giant corporation that needs your artwork? And if it's the bigger they are, the more you should charge them, and don't feel bad about it. And in fact, some places, if you don't try and charge what you're really worth, they're going to think something's wrong with you. They're going to be like, why is this guy so desperate? You know, what's wrong with him? Is he not really pro? Like, you have to figure out what you're, you know, what people are getting paid, you know, in whatever market you're working in, whether it's illustration or design, and like ask for that money. Because if you don't, no one's just going to magically say, you know what, this piece is great, I'm going to give you an extra $4,000 for it. That's never going to happen, ever. So it's up to you to negotiate that as an artist. And it's uncomfortable, it sucks, it's something that takes getting used to. I mean, maybe some people are good at talking about money and dealing, they don't really get weird about it, but you know, it's not something I'm the most comfortable with. But I always try and feel out, you know, or I'll just straight up ask, what is your budget for this project? That's a nice euphemism for saying, how much are you going to pay me? You can say, what's the budget for this project? Sounds a little nicer. And you know, sometimes you're surprised. Like, I've got some recent projects where they offered me a little bit more than what I was expecting to get, and that's great. You know, some, if it's low, then just tell them like, no, it's a little low, I really need this. And maybe you can come to, you know, a decent agreement about what the price is. But, you know, in the end, being a professional illustrator, designer, it's a business. You have to get paid, but you also have to deliver the goods to your clients. So it's a two-way street, and, you know, be responsible about your work. Thomas, we're getting towards the end. I have like one short song to play. Is there anything else that we could squeeze in like 2 minutes?
Nothing I could think of. I mean, pretty much clear. I talked about everything.
All right. Well, we
wanted to talk about some of your hobbies, but I mean,
yeah, hobbies are hobbies. Like, you know, that's important to have stuff. Like, I love, you talked about playing guitar. I love, you know, now I got into muscle cars since I moved out here, because I never saw really cars like that back east, at least in any decent shape, because everything just gets destroyed by the winter. But out here, I was like, you know, you literally will see like a 65-year-old lady in a 1968 Mustang at Trader Joe's buying her groceries. And then you're like, why don't I have a cool car? Why do I have some boring car when and out here, these cars, unless you get one that's like rare or super desirable, like, they're pretty inexpensive. So it's worth doing your research and learning how to work on cars, which I'm doing thanks to guys on the Firebird Nation forum. Those guys are helping me out big time and learning all this stuff. But yeah, and guitar too. Those are the things that I do when I'm not, and also watching movies now in 3D, like Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Go see it on acid. All right.
IMAX.
I'm going to do one more song, and I really love these guys. If you can see them live, do it. I know they're working on some new stuff. They're called The Hives, and this song is called Knock Knock.
Thanks for having us.